You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening, and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, February the 25th, and 1 month away from the trade deadline. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well.
And I'm Brother Brian, and I'm just happy we got to see the sun the last 2 days.
It was amazing. I went outside twice today, which is unbelievable on a Wednesday, but thanks to Brother Brian for staying up late with us and doing some live reaction from another entertaining Detroit Pistons game and another loss. Checks all the boxes of everything you want in this one. We're also going to talk about the league releasing the second half schedule and what the Pistons have in store after the All-Star break. I've also got an old man gripe that I made during the game, and I want to see what Brian has to say about that later on in the show. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook. Give Brother Brian a follow on Twitter at @BShook12, and also the Play Michigan account, @Play_Michigan. Brian, what's going on, man?
Not much. Another day. Snow's starting to melt. It's starting to look like spring a little bit out there. Tiger baseball starts up in a week. So all the signs are pointing towards a culmination in the first half of the NBA basketball season a little later than usual. But we're getting up there and finding our way through the season.
Yeah, March Madness right around the corner as well. Should be an exciting one. The Spartans showing some signs of life. And, of course, we expect Michigan to be at the top of one of the brackets as well in a couple weeks. But for the Pistons, they finished off the 5-game road trip going 1-4 as they dropped one in New Orleans on Wednesday night. What happened in that game, Brian?
Well, the Pistons fell to 9-23 after getting off to a hot start, but ultimately falling to the New Orleans Pelicans 128-118.
Yeah, to me, the three-pointers were falling in the first half. I took a shower at halftime for some reason. It was dumb of me because I should have just put a second-half bet on the Pelicans because it just seemed like, yeah, the Pistons were up, I think, about 5 points at the half. But it seemed like the classic back-to-back, legs are going to go a little bit from you. And New Orleans was just, frankly, obviously the better team, especially with the Pistons' best player out with some rest.
Yeah, but the 69 points from Detroit in the first half is their highest scoring output for any half of the year so far this year. So that was pretty impressive. And the shooting was definitely off the charts, which was nice to see after their last three or four-game shooting slump from deep. They were led by Josh Jackson off the bench, who scored in double digits for the 12th time in 13 games, ringing up 25 points while grabbing 6 rebounds and dishing out 3 assists.
10 of 18 shooting for him. I know some of these games haven't been super efficient, but even the non-efficient games, I mean, someone's got to be shooting with that second unit. And really the first unit in this game, he gets 29 minutes, just as much as almost anybody on the team. And he's one of the only creators, especially with Jeremy Grant out with some rest. We expect him to be just fine going forward. But Josh Jackson had to answer the bell and did it efficiently. Like I said, 10 of 18.
Also off the bench, Isaiah Stewart registered his third double-double of the year so far for the Pistons, while he was joined by Saben Lee and Svi Mykhailiuk as bench guys who scored in double digits. Sadiq Bey and Dennis Smith Jr. also joined that club as starters, and Mason Plumlee turned in another really good performance against the New Orleans Pelicans. 21 points, a team-leading – I'm sorry, not a team-leading 9 rebounds. Isaiah Stewart ended up with 10. 9 rebounds, 7 assists, and 4 blocks.
Great game from Mason Plumlee, putting up stats against a porous New Orleans defense, going up against a tough center in Steven Adams. But, you know, a lot of those are Steven Adams stepping up to try to defend the penetrator who's coming in. You get a couple lobs in there. But Mason Plumlee obviously doing his job very well. Once again, 9 of 10 from the floor, not being asked to do or not trying to do more than he does out there, and has been – everything you could have expected and more for the Pistons after they picked him up this offseason.
And Zion Williamson had a couple of big takes where he just looked just unstoppable a couple times this game. He did score 32, grabbed 6 boards, and dished out 5 assists to lead the Pelicans, and was joined by Brandon Ingram, who scored 27 and had 7 rebounds and 8 assists as well.
I was looking at that starting lineup with obviously Blake Griffin out and Jeremy Grant out for the Pistons. You start Sadiq Bey, Sekou Doumbouya, Plumlee, Dennis Smith Jr., Wayne Ellington. And I'm thinking up against Zion, Brandon Ingram, Steven Adams, Lonzo Ball, and Eric Bledsoe, that Sadiq Bey might be the best Pistons starter, and he's the 6th best player on the floor by like a pretty wide margin. The Pelicans have the 5 best starters, and the Pistons have the 5 worst, but yet here we are 39-33 at the end of the first quarter, and we'll get into why that is. The X factor, shall we say, of today's NBA made that a little bit more of a crapshoot than you might expect.
Yes. Steven Adams had a double-double of his own with 14 points and a game-high 15 rebounds. Lonzo Ball and Eric Bledsoe contributed double digits, as did Josh Hart off the bench for the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pistons were able to cover for the 2nd straight game. The betonline.ag spread of plus 11, and the over came in for the first time in 5 games, and Detroit fell to 2-5 this year on the back end of back-to-backs.
Just 4 games left before the All-Star break. Now we'll talk tomorrow about this weekend's games, the Sacramento Kings, as the Pistons head back to Detroit. 8 o'clock on Friday night, it's a little bit later than usual, and then another 8 o'clock game on Sunday for Derrick Rose's return to Little Caesars Arena with the New York Knicks. Pistons go down to Tampa, Florida to play the Toronto Raptors on Tuesday, and then close out the first half on Thursday against the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden. Raptors playing their season down in Tampa as opposed to crossing the border because of the pandemic going on. So really some winnable games, and 2 of them at home coming up for the Detroit Pistons before the All-Star break. Pistons now 2.5 games outside of the bottom of the NBA as the Timberwolves lose to the Chicago Bulls in overtime. So they are still in sole possession of that worst record in the NBA at 7-26. Pistons got to do some work if they want to get back to the bottom. But a lot of changing going on in Minnesota. You might expect that they get a couple of wins and have a little bit of a different motivation into the second half of the season. And from the Pistons end, we will talk about what the second half of the season looked like as Wednesday we found out the blueprint that the Pistons will have to navigate the rest of the way. That's coming up next here on the Lockdown Pistons podcast. But first,
Brother Brian here, and I'm here to tell you the Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Today on the Locked On Today podcast, rumors are swirling about how long Albert Pujols has left in baseball. Is he the best player of his generation? Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. I think there might be some Detroit fans who take exception to Albert Pujols possibly being the best player of his generation, although our boy did kind of fall off a cliff there a little bit at first base these last few years. Injuries, of course, being the reason for that. But I digress. This is Matt Shook, joined by Brother Brian on Locked On Pistons, talking Detroit Pistons after another entertaining loss. They keep doing it. They keep doing it. They make it compelling somehow. They keep losing, and it's good. They're 9-23 right now, looking at a long second half of the season. But guys like Saben Lee these past couple days, Jeremy Grant all season, Isaiah Stewart, Sadiq Bey, Josh Jackson as well. A lot of guys that are providing hope for a strong second half of the season. You like to see more from guys like Sekou Doumbouya and more nights like Wednesday night from Sofia Mikhailiuk as he got the shot going a little bit. But there will be plenty of minutes, plenty of chances to play, and plenty of opportunities to show your worth if you are those guys going forward. As the NBA released the second half of the schedule, the All-Star break coming up a week from tomorrow will be the final Detroit Pistons game of the first half, and then they will have 6 days off. They'll play on a Thursday, and they'll resume on a Thursday. So we'll fill up some content that week, talking All-Star weekend and some trade deadline stuff, some revisiting of our mid-season reports on Troy Weaver. I'm sure people will want to hear me at least cry a little bit of uncle on that, and we'll see how much uncle I cry on that. But then Thursday, March 11th, the Pistons will get going with a two-game roadie that weekend at Charlotte and at Brooklyn, two very interesting games there. And then in just 2 months and 6 days, they will play 36 games, ending up with a four-game homestand, including seven of the last eight games at home. And maybe there might even be some more fans in Little Caesars Arena at that point. Obviously, that's to be determined going forward. But Sunday, May 16th, this season will end up at home against the Miami Heat. And, Brian, just like as you just go down the list, and we're not going to read every game, but it's a lot more winnable, winnable, winnable. Okay, they'll lose that one. Winnable, they might lose that one, and we know they've played well against the good teams. But it's just so much more doable from a winning perspective. Obviously, that's a complicated problem there, but just nothing like the first half of the schedule that we just went through.
Yeah, what we're finding out is how brutal that first half schedule was. So you would think that you'd be able to see a little bit more quantifiable results as far as wins go in the second half with the competition being lesser. But like you said, they seem to step up and play the tougher teams on paper a little bit better and a little bit tougher, as if they're kind of getting geared up for those games. So it is a complicated issue because at the end of the day, we're looking for good draft position first and foremost out of this season, outside of maybe, you know, seeing the development, obviously, of the young players and the cohesion of the team unit. But yeah, you're looking at this and there's a lot of games on there that look pretty winnable. But you got to remember that all the teams that are looking at their second half of the schedule and see the Detroit Pistons on there, they're talking about how winnable that game is.
It's very winnable for the other teams going up against the Detroit Pistons as well. But we mentioned so many back-to-backs in the first half of the season, and every team's dealing with them here in the second half. They're squeezing a lot more games, and some teams are really playing catch-up on their schedule. The Pistons, I think, three games that they're making up here at this point. But more back-to-backs, I think eight of them here in the second half as well.
Yeah, we have eight of them. Six of them include travel. It means you got two of the home-and-home ones there, sandwiched there in the middle. If you don't think that has something to do with it, just kind of look at the first half of the season. The Pistons finished 2-5 on back end of the back-to-backs, and their only two wins were when they were playing teams that were also on their own back end of the back-to-back. So they were 2-0 in games that involved they were 1-2 in games that involved that type of situation. And then you can just look at tonight's game. The back-to-back made it so that Jeremy Grant couldn't play, and the Pistons down the stretch didn't have anybody that could kind of step up and keep pace with New Orleans in scoring. And the Pistons obviously looked fatigued here in the fourth quarter, and even actually just kind of going down the stretch from playing in a back-to-back like that. And you factor in injuries and that sort of thing that are getting guys playing more minutes than they're used to. Those games are just going to be tougher to win.
And a couple interesting notes on some of these back-to-backs. Obviously, the second of the back-to-back is the toughest one for the team. Now, if you sit out Jeremy Grant for the first of a back-to-back, they did that with Ellington last night. There's ways you can manage it as a coaching staff, but typically the second of the back-to-back is tougher for the team as a whole because you're playing for the second time in 24 hours. Three of the second back-to-back games of the eight in the second half are against the Washington Wizards. So that's interesting there, as you'll have the Pistons traveling in two of them or playing in the Washington Wizards. That's a team that you expect to be possibly at the bottom of the standings with the Pistons, although they're playing well and won again on Wednesday night. And then another one is against the Chicago Bulls, who are a team that, again, probably a level above the Detroit Pistons and the dregs of the NBA right now. But who knows? You know, the Chicago Bulls could get some more injuries and fall back, and maybe the Pistons move up a little bit here in the second half based on the way they're playing. But I know when you're 9-22, there's not a whole, or not whatever they are, 9-23 right now, there's not a whole lot of games to circle on the calendar in the second half of the season. But I got to talk about May 11th, the third to last game of the season, Tuesday, May 11th, 7 o'clock, the Minnesota Timberwolves coming to Little Caesars Arena. In what might be – Brian and I might suit up and play in the backcourt for that one. I mean, if there's a game to lose on this calendar, given that when we're talking about May, the weather's going to be nice here in downtown Detroit, it's going to be – there's no reason to win that game. I mean, talk about travesties of NBA games. That May 11th game might be a special one in NBA history.
we might get to see your boy Servetus and Magruder bring up
the buddy scoring cop load film, on that Servetus night. Yes. And Magruder, yes.
That would make take my money, please. yeah, that's obviously what was the name that we ended up coming up with for games like that? Were they green letter
the olive
games?
Olive green. Game. That's as olive green gets.
Green gets. Yep. That's a dry martini worth of olives. So, I think that, it's going to be interesting in seeing what these rookies can do as the season goes on. I mean, fatigue is going to become a bigger and bigger factor. Rookie walls are going to be hit. We're going to overreact and panic when Sadiq Bey goes on a 3 of 18 shooting slump over two games. And, I'm here for it. It's a team that's worth talking about. It's a team that's growing. It's a team that we're still going to see a lot of learning curve and bumps in the road, but I think they've shown the effort and level of competition that keeps them compelling to watch.
The Pistons have the third easiest schedule remaining in the NBA, according to the Tankathon rankings. They just take the strength of the schedule of the rest of the teams that are on your slate there. So the 28th hardest schedule, the third easiest schedule in the NBA as the teams combined for a 486 winning percentage by average. The Brooklyn Nets have the hardest schedule. The easiest schedule left. I get this mixed up all the time. And the Utah Jazz are second, the Pistons third. The Minnesota Timberwolves, we will be referencing plenty here in the second half of the season. They have the fourth toughest schedule remaining with 51.8 winning percentage of their opponents left in the season. So as far as losing and tanking, the Timberwolves have an upper hand there with a tougher schedule, while the Pistons will have to do a little bit more sleight of hand and a little bit more work to lose some games as they seemingly have an easier schedule the rest of the way. But I got one complaint from modern NBA and what we saw on Wednesday night. We'll see what Brian has to say about that. That's coming up next year on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Got to tell you guys about rockauto.com. It is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet for your ride. Whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifications and the prices that you prefer. Best of all, those prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for the professionals as the do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? It just doesn't make any sense. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck right locked on in their How'd You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. This week we have two conversations for you to wrap up the month. First, a discussion on protests in sports across leagues. Then, tune in for a discussion about the importance of Black history in sports, what's been achieved, and the important work left to be done, all in discussion on the Locked On Presents podcast feed. Subscribe on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. Matt Shook here, host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, joined by brother Brian, as I am often in these late night reaction podcasts. We hope to continue into the second half as brother Brian, obviously a valuable part, an integral part of the Locked On Pistons team. We talked about the second half coming up this year. And tomorrow's show, Fridays with Brian, as you've come to expect, I'm going to throw out some trade offers at Brian, because if the Pistons' schedule is getting loosened up, and if we've decided that this is pretty much a 4 or 5-man top tier in the NBA draft as we sit here right now, and that you want to be as bottom as possible, and that worst team in the NBA guarantees that top 5 pick, whereas the second worst team in the NBA doesn't, do you think that the Pistons should consider trades that they might not otherwise, given that they want to make this team a little bit worse in the second half of the season to fulfill those rights? And we talked about how Mason Plumlee, you probably could trade him now. DeLon Wright maybe in that boat as well. Maybe a Josh Jackson type of deal. I know that he's beloved here in the first half for good reason with Pistons fans. We want to see him part of the future. But if there are good offers, if there is value out there, should Troy Weaver maybe think about, and we'll talk more specifically tomorrow about it, Brian, but in general, do you think an easier second half of the schedule should be a reason for Troy Weaver to pull the trigger on some trades that he maybe wouldn't have given that other circumstances?
I think it should be a factor like several. That means that there's not many people on this roster that are necessarily untouchable, save for the three rookies. But we've shown Troy Weaver has an aggressiveness that actually, you know, probably nobody's completely 100% safe if they keep performing well. I think one of the big reasons that he should always be looking at offers for anybody on the roster is, ultimately, if you're going to be stockpiling picks like he seems want to do, then you're going to need to create space for this. I mean, I saw somebody had tweeted out during the game today, like, if you end up winning the lottery next year and getting Cade Cunningham, all of a sudden you've got four point guards that all deserve minutes. So you need this. This needs to be a roster that's constantly fluid and always moving, because you're going to hopefully accumulate assets that mean roster spots that are going to be demanding of minutes. So I think that phone should always be prepared to be answered by the front office.
Yeah, I think on the surface, after the Derrick Rose trade, that obviously you want to shop Wayne Ellington and you're probably open for business on some other guys at a small level. The Pistons fans probably don't expect a big trade deadline. Obviously, there's the Blake Griffin elephant in the room that's going to work itself however it's going to work itself out over these next couple of weeks. But again, Troy Weaver, he surprised us a lot with the quantity of moves that he made in the offseason, and there's no telling whether at the trade deadline if he surprises us again with the quantity of moves. We know from you with the trading cards, we know with NBA Top Shot right now, it's all about the value, right? It's all about selling high, buying low. Troy Weaver seems like someone who wants to be wheeling and dealing. And again, I hate to keep mentioning Josh Jackson because I probably sound like I want to get rid of him. That is not the case. But he's playing really well right now. And this, if there is a good time to trade him, and again, there's a lot of reason to believe he's going to be a long NBA career and in the red, white, and blue for the Detroit Pistons, that's just fine too for the rest of his career. But if Troy Weaver thinks that there's good value in a trade for a guy like that, that might be a reason to send that guy on his way. Now, I want to bring up a comment from Stan Van Gundy back when he was a Pistons coach, just one of those scrums, legendary scrums with reporters, where he was open about a lot of his thoughts about not just the NBA world, but the world in general. And we know and like Stan Van Gundy for a lot of his openness and a lot of his ideas as well. But one of the things that he talked about back in the day was that the three-point era in the NBA, and we're not breaking new ground saying how important the three-pointers are this year. The Ringer did a big story this season about how make or miss league, we know all about that, but this year even more so than others, teams are not only shooting more threes, but if you make more than the team that you're going up against, you win this game. And that was not the case on Wednesday night, as the Pistons lose, knock down more threes, although the Pelicans did have a better percentage, 10 of 23. But at the end of the day, we're talking about 23 of 60. 63 pointers combined from the Pelicans and the Pistons, 37 of them in the first half. Brian, and a lot of that is the second, you know, this is the Pistons team going for an upset on the road, second half of back to back. The legs, it probably makes it a little bit easier to throw up a three than run some offense. And we know that open three pointers is good offense, that's good shots. But do you think that there are at times, or even as a general rule, from a fan's perspective, too many three-pointers shot in a lot of games, if not almost all games in the NBA these days?
Well, yeah, I think it takes a lot of the strategy and the enjoyment of watching potential good one-on-one matchups, people taking balls to the rim, and a lot of motion on offense. It takes out a lot. I mean, you can just point to the Pistons specifically. They're the fifth worst shooting three-point shooting team in the league at under 35% this year. But then even look at six out of the nine wins they have had this year, they shot 39% or above from three-point range. So you're absolutely right. If you hit 3 points in a given game or a night, you are going to win that basketball game. It's just what the reality of today's NBA is, because it seems to me it could be what it's one of those, the toothpaste is out of the tube right now. You can't put it back in. I think that we can lament it, but you're going to be the old guy at the bar because it's just the way that things are going. And I don't necessarily see that there's any conceivable way to get that trend going in the other direction.
Yeah, and 3 points is still going to be more than two. I'm not even really in favor of moving back the three-point line because then you're – I don't know. I don't think that really solves the problem, if there is a problem. I know there's a lot of fans listening and thinking that there's no problem. And, yes, Stephen Curry is a lot of fun to watch, and he's revolutionized the game. But he's got a lot of guys out there shooting threes. And, again, on a typical night in the NBA this year, this is not something that I sit there and I'm bothered by. But just thinking about a team that – goes into a game that knows they're underdogs and just kind of fires from three. And it's probably the best strategy, especially when you're undermanned, to go out there. And if you get hot, you get some wins. Now, that being considered, think about those numbers that you threw out there, the Pistons being a poor three-point shooting team. That's with Wayne Ellington shooting a very high percentage right now, and he's expected to either get traded or bought out after the trade deadline if they can't get anything for him. Svi Mykhailiuk is a guy, and I know he's not shooting well this year, but you take him off this roster possibly in a trade as a guy who might get dealt by Troy Weaver. Jeremy Grant, the three-point numbers are going down a little bit, but he's at 37% right now, which is a little bit lower than his last couple seasons. But with the volume that he has right now, that's really pretty good, 37%. So there's some expectancy or possibility that that number goes down a little bit in the second half. So take away a couple of those guys and get a little bit of a Jeremy Grant tailspin three-pointer wise in the second half. Things could get pretty ugly for the Pistons shooting threes, but again, maybe that helps some of the losses, and maybe it's a good problem to have for the Detroit Pistons. But I don't know, I'm curious about some of you guys on Twitter already reaching out saying I'm with you. You know, it's probably the 35 and above crew that and again, this is a fan base that grew up on Pistons Pacers, right? The going to work series, 70-67 in the Eastern Conference playoffs. That's like poetry to us, right? So when they have to change the rules and get more offense going in the Western Conference and get Dwayne Wade to go to the line 25 times in the NBA Finals, that's just something that's blasphemous for Detroit fans, right?
Yeah, but you also forgot to mention that, you know, especially I think it was very apparent in Jeremy Grant's absence in tonight's game, Sadiq Bey really coming into his own, starting to look for more of a shot. He looks like he's more than willing to step up and take up on a bigger offensive and shooting role if that's what's dictated to him. And, you know, it could help the development of somebody like Sadiq Bey or even Killian Hayes if he's forced to get into situations where he's taking more perimeter shots and working on that. Because again, what I like about Sadiq Bey and Killian Hayes from deep is both of them shoot a very heavy ball. It stays near the rim, and you have somebody like Isaiah Stewart underneath disrupting things and grabbing offensive rebounds, give you a lot of chances for second chance points.
Sadiq Bey at 40% coming into tonight's game, just outstanding rookie season from the Villanova product coming to the Detroit Pistons and doing his alma mater and also his new fans at the Detroit Pistons. Very proud with another strong game, very aggressive without Jeremy Grant in the starting lineup and had another strong game. Went out with the ankle injury there, but returned and looks like he should be just fine. So a lot to like about with these Pistons going forward, especially as the second half of the season approaches here in Detroit. But that'll do it for Locked On Pistons. I'm your host, Matt Shook. He is Brother Brian. We'll be back for the usual Fridays with Brian tomorrow. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
What's going on with Saquon?